Hello, I was never called Mummy Linda before.
Morning.
Good morning, Helen. How are you?
I'm surprisingly bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, given that I've got a 10-week-old daughter. But yeah, I'm
Is it
great.
10 weeks? 10 weeks today. Old. Oh.
Can you believe it? It's completely bizarre. But she looks completely different. For every day to day, I look at her and think, I got bigger in the night. I don't know how it happens. But yeah, doing really, really well, thanks. Just in while Kerry's away, and then I'm back at work in about 3 or 4 weeks. Back to reality.
So how was it? How was the birth? How did that go?
I'll be completely honest, it was fine.
Was it?
It was fine. Yeah, I ended up being induced, which I really didn't want to be. But actually, once I'd made my peace with it, it was only a day after I was due, my body was ready. For me, having an epidural as early as possible was the key. And I'm not saying that's for everybody. Some people want to, you know, experience it all. I didn't. I watched a movie on demand and read my Kindle, and my husband went over to Waffy for a burger for his lunch. Thank you very much. And then, so I was in labour for about 4 or 5 hours.
Oh, wow.
So she came in the afternoon. It was great. It was absolutely great. City Hospital were fantastic. My doctor was amazing. And now I'm scared to have number two, because I think my pregnancy was fine. The birth was fine. She's a really good baby. What if number two is a horror show? Because people do have very different pregnancies from time, you know.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's good to hear that, you know, 10 weeks old and it's going well for you. Yeah, she's sleeping through the night?
No, she's not, but we're getting there. For me, I mean, I'm a big lover of routine, so... And she's really taken to a routine as well. So she feeds every 4 hours. We give her a feed at 11 o'clock at night. She wakes up about 5, and then she goes back to sleep till 7:30. So we're really lucky. I think a big part of it is that we're quite relaxed, and she's quite relaxed. She's a content little thing.
Well, Linda recommended a book for you, The Happiest Baby on the Block. Now, Linda, you swear by this book.
I absolutely swear by it. I was given it by a family who said if we only would have known this book was around and we would have read it before, the first child would have been much easier to handle. Basically, what Dr. Harvey Karp, the author of this book, is saying, that you got to swaddle your child. He says it's very important that you do this because... it just relaxes the baby. It feels like the baby's back in the womb.
Feels
so
contained and safe.
You swaddle it, you give the baby a dummy, you flip it around, hold it on your arm facing downwards, and then you give it a nice rock, and then you put on some white noise. So these five
white noise
steps
apps
really
are
works.
Amazing.
What? White noise apps?
Yeah, so because the womb is naturally a very noisy place, babies are actually a little bit uncomfortable with complete silence, which I'm very grateful for, given we've got two dogs who go mental for many times a day. So you can get a white noise app, you know, for free from most places, and it can be anything. It could be noise of a vacuum cleaner, running water, the Hoover,
a train, a
market, you know, the static on a television. And that kind of abstract noise they find very, very relaxing. So that can be soothing for them if they're upset, and it can help them get to sleep as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, and the swaddling helps in preventing the baby from hitting itself. And this is what happened to my daughter, Clara. Her arms, she never used them before, and suddenly she hit herself in the face. She got upset about that. So when we swaddled her in the evening, oh, she loved it. She calmed down, and she hardly ever cried. She was such a happy baby. She slept well. She ate well. And I think it sort of paved the way for her development a lot. So Dr. Harvey Karp, The Happiest Baby on the Block, really did the trick. And I give it to anyone who's pregnant as a gift. If they want it or not, I give it to them.
So you feel like you've done your bit. The one thing that I would say that really helped me from the beginning, and I saw that doctor on Oprah. God, I love Oprah. And I saw another expert on Oprah called... I'm going to have to look this up, and I'll pass it on so you can post it if you find it interesting. So it's an Australian woman who has got a photographic memory, but for sound. So growing up, you know, her mother would play a piano or something on the piano, and she'd be able to replicate it straight away with, you know, no problems whatsoever. So, you know, very nice skill to have, you know, what have you. However, when she became a mother, she found it very useful because she started recognising what certain cries of her child meant, how she could solve that problem straight away. And as it happens, there are five cries that she's identified that are universal. So regardless of your language or nationality, these noises, these languages that babies have, they're universal. So we identify kind of three with Phoebe, and one was when she was hungry, which is like a na na na, begins with an N, and then there's a higher one, which is basically gas in her chest, and then there's a lower one which is gas in her tummy. And as soon as you hear that, you know to give her a burp or if she's hungry, and it just means that you kind of cut down on that crying time.
Wow, that's really interesting, isn't it?
It's really interesting. So it's about 20 minutes clip on Oprah. And I'll pass it on to you, and I'll find this girl's
name. Well, Linda's gone straight to the computer. Let's find that, Linda, and we'll post it up on our website.
And it's great, and you know, she's working with these newborn babies and their mums, and, you know, hears a cry and says, right, try this, put her over your shoulder, burp her, feed her, you know, get some gas out of her tummy. And the results are amazing, and I think that's helped, because it feels like I'm communicating with Phoebe a bit more efficiently than I would do if I wasn't more tuned into these cries.
One of our listeners has texted in, Linda, asking to define swaddle, please.
I got a swaddle blanket. I believe it was Centrepoint in Mall of the Emirates. And it is a blanket where I hold the arms of the baby down and put one part of the blanket over her shoulder, tuck it in. And then the other one, I put over her again. And then she's like a little package.
Like a little glowworm. We bought something called a swaddle sack from Pottery Barn. And actually, they're on sale at the moment. They're normally about 200 dirhams, and I think they're about 40 now. I, however, bought loads before they went on sale. And it's like a sleeping bag, but it's got a little vest top. So you zip them into it. The zip goes down to the bottom so it doesn't irritate their neck. And their arms go through the holes, and they can either be down the side, like Linda says, and, you know, on either side of them, and then it's got two wings on either side of the swaddle sack, and it velcros over and then over again. Or, like Phoebe does, she sleeps with her arms up beside her, so she can have her arms out. And they're fantastic. They're dead easy, and just go in the wash. So some have Velcro, some rely on kind of tucking techniques. There's loads of tutorials on YouTube.
But be careful with the arms out, because that's what caused the problems for my daughter. She would hit herself accidentally, not knowing that she was hitting herself. She didn't know where it was coming from. That's how uncoordinated babies are.
I think when they're
are.
Very, very little, they have this reflex where if they have a little shock, and actually Phoebe does this, if she's sleeping and I go over a speed bump in the car, her arms shoot out just without her realising. I think that's it. It's a reflex that goes away with time. I think some babies are kind of more prone than others.
Well, swaddle, it sounds like what I do most nights, actually. When I go to bed, I like to get really tucked in, nice and tight.
You
and
do
really,
sleep better in a sleeping bag,
do.
I find.
Yeah, you're going to a really deep sleep, yeah. So it's great. And we're going to be looking at a great feature you've got in this month's magazine when it comes to parenting tips. And you've sourced from some really good people here in the UAE and further afield. But you're going back to work in 3 weeks' time.
I am.
How do you feel about that? Because one of your articles, it's not directly about that, but it's about how to be employable in 10 years' time. And I wonder, now becoming a mom, has that altered the way you feel about your career?
It has, actually, but not in the way I thought. I was really, really, really concerned that I wouldn't want to go back to work. However, I love my job, and it's not like I'm going back to a job I hate. And what I've been surprised by is I'm actually feeling oddly ambitious. I feel like I'm feeling really fired up about going to work, and I don't know if that's partly because I want some kind of intellectual stimulation that isn't talking about nappies. That's probably part of it. I love the team that I work with, but also I feel like I want to set Phoebe a good example as a working mum, and I want to kind of show her what I'm capable of as a person as well as being a mother. So I think it can go either way. Ask me again in a month's time when I'm crying as I get into the car. So I'm going to go back hopefully 3 or 4 days a week to begin with. And actually, the UAE, because it's very pro-breastfeeding, you do get slightly shorter hours. You get an hour less a day. So I think some people might go home at lunch break to feed, or they can go home a little bit earlier. So the UAE's a bit conflicted in that. They're very, very pro-breastfeeding, but obviously the maternity leave is very short.
Yeah.
So yeah. You've got to negotiate with your own employer and see what you can work out between yourselves.
Well, I'm looking at your feature here, 2025, but how to be employable in 10 years' time. Be ready to reskill, says recruitment expert Sanjay Modi, your contributor this month. And I'm just going to read the opening paragraph of your copy. What do Twitter, the iPhone, and South Sudan have in common? None of them existed 10 years ago. The same is true of an increasing number of job roles employees are seeking to fill today. We're witnessing huge changes in the job market, and this is only going to intensify. So where do you think you'll be in 10 years' time? Have you got the skills to move with the times? And editor of Good Magazine, Helen Farmer, we've pulled her away from maternity leave to join us today as Kerry is on holiday in Vegas. Go, girl.
Yeah, actually, a colleague's getting married there.
Oh, lovely.
No, Elvis.
Elvis.
I don't know if Elvis is actually marrying them, but that's what I imagine a Vegas wedding.
It's an Elvis
to be
wedding.
Like.
Excellent. So. Also around the table is Dubai Today producer Linda Berenger. And now, listen, have you ever changed career? Have you? Where were you 10 years ago? What were you doing? Did you foresee a change or a shift in what you do, and maybe retrained or transferred some skills into another area? Well, taking a look in this month's issue of Good Magazine, how to be employable in 10 years. What did you discover, Helen?
Well, 10 years makes a huge difference. When I think about what I was doing 10 years ago, I was in England and the thought of moving abroad hadn't crossed my mind at all. In fact, actually, my parents were expats and they'd suggested it to me and I was hugely resistant to it. I really, really didn't want to. And then, of course, things change and opportunities come up, and moving to UAE opened up a whole world. So I was working in broadcasting and doing some PR as well. And then, I don't know, it's funny how things just kind of conspire. So
yes,
some people plan ahead. I didn't. It's working out very well. What was thinking about the coming 10 years, and as you said before, Twitter, the iPhone in South Sudan, didn't exist a decade ago. What will be there in 10 years' time? I'm sure there are trend predictors out there who've got a very good idea, but for most of us, not a clue. So what we need to do is equip ourselves with both skills and the right mindset for being adaptable to these changes, and perhaps not resisting change that is going to be inevitable. And when we think about our jobs, as an example, 10, 15 years ago, working as an editor, you know, you'd be there and you'd be on your computer. Facebook wasn't around in the UK and the UAE at that point. So social media wasn't such a huge thing. You'd have your red pen, you'd be sitting there marking pages up, passing them back to your art director. Different computer programs were in existence. Whereas now, when you think about a magazine, you've got to have a social media presence. You've got to be on Instagram, you've got to be on Twitter, you've got to be on Facebook, the website side as well. So even within a job that's traditionally print-based, you've got to open your mind and think about, you know, radio as well.
It's the same in radio, yeah. We have to, as we do, open up to online media alongside what we're doing. And that's what people are looking to. And with the smartphone, people at their fingertips have information.
That's right.
And we're part of the information industry, so we've got to serve the need, what's there. But you've got to, the article's outlining, you've got to kind of look ahead, be in touch, see what's happening within your industry, and be, not necessarily ahead, but hopefully in line with the change as it comes.
Exactly. And also be communicating with your employer that you are open to these changes. So putting yourself forward for training, for perhaps internships in other departments, or if there's any sister companies or affiliates that you could learn from. And I think, our expert Sanjay was saying it's networking, and that's so true of this region, isn't it? And it
yeah.
doesn't have to be...
We like to network, don't we?
We do, and it doesn't have to be a kind of a very formal, go along to a business an environment, but letting people know what you do, asking for introductions, and also constantly learning. You can't close yourself off to that. And I think the danger of people who perhaps haven't gotten to, shall we say, late adopters of social media could well be shooting themselves in the foot, because there's a whole new wave of jobs that didn't exist, your app developers, SEO experts, bloggers, and this is just going to grow and grow and grow. And you can stamp your foot and say no, I don't want to be involved in that, but ultimately you could be closing yourself off to some big opportunities and perhaps a few paychecks as well.
No, I understand that, and I can agree with that to a point. I think you're right. I think you need to be open to it. You need to acknowledge it. You can't deny what's happening when it comes to technology and online worlds. But I also think it can go the other way, and I don't know what you think about this, where you find that you think you've got to be on top of everything that's happening online, and it might not be the smartest move for
you.
No,
that's very true, because not all mediums are suitable for every person or every business. So, but you've got to have that level of knowledge to understand what
yes.
suits you or your company best, and then you can choose. I mean, there's no point in having a Tumblr site, for instance, if it's just not relevant to your company. And it's not just about the technology side as well. Things like learning languages, especially in a region such as here, and what you'll often see is they're looking for a bilingual candidate. And that might just, unfortunately, you might not be able to order your dinner in, at the Lebanese restaurant. It's really, truly understanding, a business level of Arabic. And that's also translatable for you to move abroad as well. So brushing up on your European languages as well, and giving yourself the edge in what is going to become an increasingly competitive marketplace.
Linda, your thoughts. You worked in media, you worked in TV, you the face on camera, you're producing for us. In the meantime, you've had a baby. Did you at any point plan what was coming in your career, work life? Did you at times in your life, because I certainly have had to do this, train for something at all?
I did. I studied business administration and economics, and I always wanted to go in media. So people said to me, why are you studying business and economics? And I said, because I need to have a good foundation. I want to be a journalist covering the markets, currencies, commodities. So I actually should know what I'm talking about. That's right. And not just study journalism.
Yeah, talk with authority about the subject.
Exactly. And it always helped me a lot. When we were talking about the monetary policy of the ECB, I actually knew what they were doing. And other journalists were like, oh, I don't understand this. So anyway, they still wrote about it. So I then, after university, I went on to the Berlin Journalism School. So learned my skills to be a journalist, which is something that I value a lot. It was really great, and it was a great platform to network. We had some amazing teachers, and I was actually the only one, though, from that class of 16 who actually found a permanent job because I had the background in economics. I found a job with CNBC Europe. They were looking for a stock market reporter to broadcast from the Frankfurt Stock Exchange then. However, they didn't let me go on camera immediately. They said, you're not ready. You need to be in the background first and learn how our corporation works. And this is what I did. And I always loved that. And I always had a goal, right? I wanted to be on camera. And then after a year or one and a half, I was ready to go. My boss did a lot of training with me. Every week we did on-air training. And the first time on air in front of that TV camera, my heart was beating. But it was a great experience. I loved the job. But then the financial downturn came in 2009. They laid off 80% of the team. And there I was, didn't know what to do. Immediately found a job, though, as a freelancer with a German press agency. They were looking for people to produce videos for their website, which was great because I knew how to be in front of the camera, which I had to do there too. But I learned something extra. I learned how to video edit. And this is something I'm using today.
Yeah.
And you always say to me, you like my editing skills.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
and it's perfect because there you were. It was a few years ago, but it's come up to speed because, I mean, I went last summer to the London School of Journalism when I was there. I did a 3-day course on blogging because we know that we've got to be in line with what's happening online, and one of the things that were coming up on that course is blogging, but vlogging. You need to be able to video and tell that story in a minute and a half, and so people can just click on the phone and see that information. And Linda's great because I don't have time to do all that, but Linda's there alongside me, and you can check out some of the work on our website as we speak now.
Exactly. We did a great movie where we went down to the Royal Canon headquarters, and it was amazing, and I'm just proud of it. And I think, yes, one door closes. Yes, I lost my job, and I was crying the entire day on my last day. But then another door opens, and there were new opportunities, and I learned so many valuable skills. I wouldn't have learned them staying in front of that camera. Mm-hmm. And when I turn on the TV, I see a few people that could stay on with CNBC, and they're doing a fine job. But I thought, you know, I had the opportunity to go to Dubai during the financial downturn. There weren't many opportunities in Germany, so then we went on to Dubai in 2010, and it was great.
So, have you retrained? Have you foreseen something happening in your career where you know you've got to maybe change, maybe bring in some training? How to be employable in 10 years? Where do you think you'll be in 10 years? What do you do for a living? And do you think it's going to change a lot in 10 years or not so much? When we come back, we'll be exploring more of the pages of this month's issue of Good Magazine. Helen's here from Good Magazine, editor Helen Farmer, new mom, 10-week-old baby Phoebe.
Still pretty new.
Yeah.
Still don't really know what I'm doing.
And we're going to be taking a look at a feature in this month's issue on parenting advice and giving you some tips, sharing some of the feature with you. But first, we're just going through this, how to be employable in 10 years. We've also got Dubai Today producer, that is Linda Berenger, by our side. She's always by my side, but she's... The mic's up for her this morning. And we're looking at where we might be in 10 years' time. And do you think about that? Or even looking back over your career, where you maybe need to rechange or retrain and diversify. And I think part of where you may be feeling concerned about the future in your job is about recognizing the strengths that you already have,
exactly,
and seeing how to transfer those skills.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Transferable skills is exactly it. And we worked with a women's empowerment coach. Now, there's a job that probably didn't exist 10 years ago, Lisa Harter. And she's talking about, you know, your career path is much more satisfying when you recognise and celebrate your strengths. You'll feel more secure in yourself when you've got a strong grip in that. So make a list of your educational achievements, your skills, your significant pastimes and hobbies. And next to them, try listing the strengths and skills used to achieve these. And then see what patterns and themes you are emerging. So, like, you know, we're saying we're all in media, we're all in community, but if this job doesn't exist in a new place we move to, what skills can we then apply to job prospects out there?
Yeah, because that's the point as well. If you end up leaving the UAE, going to a new place, new country, and you're thinking, what am I going to do there? How am I going to get into the work ladder there? You might need to transfer some skills and look at changing slightly
exactly.
what you do.
And then you can start amending your CV and gearing it towards a specific job and, you know, adding something in and taking something away to custom make your CV towards that specific area. So it's about cultivating that confidence in your abilities. And like we said before, being open-minded and having open eyes to different areas that are going to be emerging, whether that's in digital and technology, which it is.
Yeah,
I think
it is.
For a lot of us. And that might be something as simple as a new computer program that we need to learn, or going kind of back to basics in what we do already. Because once you do get to a certain level, you perhaps forget about the real kind of grassroots nitty-gritty of the role. And who knows, when it comes to moving jobs, you might need to go back to those basics.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to learn. I like that. You know, I think we get stuck in what we do and we know what we do, and then the idea of change is scary. But as Linda just said, she believes that she can learn anything. And to have that attitude is fantastic, to go, do you know what, I've got to figure out how this new program works, and I'm going to do that. I need to understand what it will take for me to get that job that I want, and what do I need to put in place to get there.
And it's hugely enriching, not just from an intellectual point of view, but often learning and networking go hand in hand, whether that's networking with the tutor and, you know, fellow classmates. You know, for instance, I did a really great interior design course at DuckDuck a few years ago, and we've since used the tutor in Good Magazine. She's, you know, a fantastic writer, and, you know, we use some lovely photographs, and I made some really good friends on that course as well, in all different areas. So it's about making that time and investing in yourself. It's very easy to sit and, you know, have a brunch or, you know, hang out on the beach for a few hours. But if you start doing some of these workshops and classes that are around at the moment, you can be adding another string to your bow and having a good time.
Download on your Kindle or buy the book, you know, in that old-fashioned way, in paper form. And, you know, and you can be reading at night and educating yourself. Now, Linda, you've got a book you wanted to recommend.
Oh, yes, it's Miss Moneypenny's Career Advice for Ambitious Women. I read it, and basically it says you need to network. It is important who you know. It is also important what you know, but who you know is going to get you to the position that you want.
Interesting. I read a book last year called Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office, which jarred with me because I like to think I am a nice girl. Yeah. But it was very interesting from a female point of view, talking about the differences in attitude between men and women. And if, for instance, there's a job advertised that a man fancies and he might not meet all the criteria that they demand, he probably wouldn't see the harm in sticking in an application and blagging it a bit should it get to the interview stage and putting himself forward and putting himself out there, whereas women tend to be a little bit more discouraged if they don't initially meet the criteria that they're looking for. So it's about kind of adjusting that mindset as well, and perhaps being a little bit more ambitious and a bit more confident, and not downplaying, accepting compliments.
Well, a lot of confidence in the magazine, and that's what you do each month, is to give people tips and ideas and advice via different means. You know, if you're a consumer, where's the best place to buy certain products?
That's right.
You've got a piece this month on green beauty, which I found really interesting.
Well, this is something that's obviously an emerging field as well. You know, people are much more educated on these things than they used to be, and whether that's choosing paraben-free products or going really back to basics. And actually having a baby, this is really interesting, because I'd never really thought about it, but when you've got this pure little creature in front of you, you don't want to be using chemicals or avoiding chemicals as much as possible on the skin that's, you know, never seen the world before. So, you know, using raw kind of whole foods and coconut oils and things that exist in nature. So there's an expert called Loreen who's launched something called greenbeautybox.com, which is an online boutique that is bringing organic, sustainable beauty products and cult beauty products to the UAE, so never been available before. So she's answered some kind of pretty key questions. Some, I think, it's good to be informed, but you can't also take it a bit too far and make life really difficult for yourself. You know, I like going for pedicure. I'm not going to seek out somewhere that has a green beauty nail varnish because it's probably going to be very, very expensive, chances are, and also really difficult to find. So it's about creating a balance and using things that are important to you. If you're eating green, you're eating organic, then what you put on your skin is actually just as important as what you're putting inside your body. So we've rounded up some key products and key ingredients that people can be looking out for, whether that's green tea or shea butter or coconut oil. Argan oil is a really hot product at the minute.
You can using argan oil as a night oil, yeah.
As like a facial oil?
Yeah, I mean, I use Liz Earle, right?
I love
Liz Earle, but I can't get it. Yeah, it's the hot cloths.
I'm obsessed with
them. I love the hot cloths, and but I can't get it here. No, you can't get Liz Earle here. So I have friends bring it over when they're coming over, or my mum sends it over. She orders it online in England and sends it over to me, but all natural. And there is a lovely night serum, which is argan oil, and so it just kind of it plumps you up a little bit in the night.
Oh,
keeps your skin plumped up.
It's a real hot product. It's Moroccan, comes from the argan tree, and people are using it for anything. So like a facial oil or a body spray, or it's great for hair as well. I think a lot of companies are tapping into these natural resources. And of course, some people are putting a bit of a PR spin. It might have a tiny, tiny amount in it, but it revitalizes their product in the marketplace. But if you go back to basics, you can get some really pure, fantastic oils. And, you know, even if you've got oily skin, actually, putting oil on it is one of the best things you can do. So don't be afraid. Coconut oil I use for everything.
Yeah. Yeah, coconut's fantastic.
Cooking, the dogs love it. I put it on their food.
In your hair, you know.
And smell like a bounty bar.
Exactly.
Smell delicious.
Exactly. So it's a great feature, again, and giving you some ideas and insights into what's available here on what you can get your hold of and help you with your beauty regime if you want to keep it natural. You mentioned the dogs there. We have got the Animal House coming up at 11 o'clock.
Yes, I might send in some questions.
I was going to say, yeah, with bringing the newborn home with your two beautiful Cocker Spaniels.
Well, yeah, that was it has been quite interesting, actually. We did a lot of research into this before because, to our minds, we had the dogs first, and the last thing we wanted to do was kind of compromise their quality of life, or worst case scenario, have to get rid of them because we were bringing a baby into the house. That's not their fault that we've made that life decision. So we did a lot of research into it in terms of what we can do. My husband wanted to take it a bit further and get a dolly that he called the stunt baby and then have me sitting on the sofa pretending to feed it and make sure the dog didn't come too close. We didn't do this.
No, I'm glad to hear it, because I would hate for you to come home one day and stunt dollies in the mouth of one of your dogs, because it's not a real baby. And they don't know. They just think it's a toy. Yes. But they're not going to think that, by the way. Don't panic. I'm not suggesting they're going to do that with a real baby.
So what we did was, when I was still in the hospital, my husband brought back like a sleep suit that Phoebe had worn and a nappy for them to smell. And it was much like introducing, well, we have a really old dog, it was much like introducing the puppy to her. It's taking it slowly and kind of reading their moods. And if they're not ready, or if they're feeling anxious or agitated, it's not the right time to introduce a newborn. So we came home and sat down and tried to create a nice, calm mood. And they'd already smelt her. And they knew something was up. Dogs know. When I was pregnant, they would, you know, the puppy especially, he'd drape himself across my lap, and they know. They smell anger, fear, all the stuff that comes along with pregnancy. And it's been fine. Actually, Lizzie, who's 10, she doesn't care at all. She sits in a basket and, you know, doesn't raise an eyebrow. Jarvis wants to smell her and he licks her feet, which, you know, I'm sterilizing bottles morning, noon and night, and using special detergents, and then I let the dog lick her feet. But, you know,
good
it's all part and parcel of family
build
life.
Up her immune system.
That's what I think.
Get the
too.
Antibodies in there. I think it's lovely. I love it. And I think, well, Phoebe is going to grow up with animals around her.
Be raised by spaniels, Suzanne. She's going to be barking before she talks. I'm fully aware of this. But I'd love to hear some more expert advice, actually, because I do think a lot of families sacrifice their pets when a baby comes on the scene, and they can coexist. And what a lovely thing to be raised and not be afraid of animals. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, so Helen, let's take a look at your piece on parenting. Q&A. What are people asking about? What are people concerned about when it comes to their little ones?
I promise this hasn't come from me. No, there are some very useful information for when she gets a little bit older, though. So we looked at, we spoke to four experts. We've got Andaline, who works in the UAE with Big on Children as their super granny.
Oh, I know Andaline. We've interviewed her. And interesting to say Big on Children. I actually interviewed Summer yesterday from Big on Children. You can hear that interview tomorrow.
Fantastic. They've been working together very closely, and she's done some workshops and kind of meeting parents one-on-one during her trips here from South Africa. Rachel Waddelove, who has been used by major celebs like Gwyneth Paltrow and Minnie Driver with their parenting. Even Gwyneth Paltrow is not a perfect parent, I'd like to point out. So she's a British mum of six. So she was a midwife and nurse and the wife of a dairy farmer, and then started realising that she actually could apply some of the things she's learnt to parents all over the world. So she's known as kind of the baby whisperer. And then we've spoken to Mahira from Blossom Nursery. So you can imagine nursery age, you come across a lot of potential problems, whether that's being, you know, weaning off food, being left by their parents for the first time, biting, all that kind of things. And also Reem from Apple Seeds, which is the play centre in the Golden Diamond Park. So we spoke to these four experts about a number of different problems, including my little one won't sleep through the night, toddler won't eat the greens, throwing tantrums, being afraid of the dark, and children not playing nicely together. Guilty as charged when I was little. My brother still got the scars. But what's interesting is a lot of these women are actually very much on the same page, which I think is fantastic, because as a new parent, you read all these books and there's such conflicting advice. It's like, feed on demand, don't feed on demand. You know, a routine is fantastic. A routine will stunt your child. You get all these really, really conflicting advice, and often it's when you're at the most vulnerable, and you'll grasp at any kind of information to help you get just an hour more sleep. The things I've Googled at 2 o'clock in the morning in the first few weeks of you know, breastfeeding in the night, you'd read it in the morning, think, good grief, dark times, you know, it is tough. So to have these four women in agreement on lots of topics, I found really encouraging. So we look at one, for instance, my little one won't sleep through the night. What Andaline puts across a really good point, which is the way you put a child to sleep is the way that they're going to soothe themselves. So if you're, you know, jiggling your baby, they're falling asleep on you, you're singing, you know, you're rocking them. When they wake up in the night and you feed them, that's what they're going to need to get back to sleep. Or if they wake up in the night on their own, they're going to need you to soothe them. So it's really good to get them into a routine where they, if you recognise they're getting sleepy, put them in the Moses basket, so they're not reliant on someone else, because otherwise you're going to be in and out of their bedroom or their Moses basket all night helping them drop off. And also recognise the fact that toddlers, it's quite normal for them to be awake. You know, it could be time zones, it could be teething, it could be going through a kind of a mental or a physical leap. So the more they can do to soothe themselves, the less trouble you're bringing on yourself. How are you finding toddlerhood for baby Clara?
I'm finding it difficult, and I wish that my daughter would have come with a manual, because sometimes I really don't know what is right and what is wrong. So for instance, when she falls asleep in the evening, my husband and I both lay down on the bed and she's in between us, and we just start talking it silently with each other, and she loves to hear that, and it calms her down immediately.
Oh,
so she
that's
doesn't
lovely.
This is our way of doing it. It's worked really well. So we have basically a 10-minute good chat, my husband and I, and the daughter's falling asleep. How good is that?
Isn't that good? Yeah.
And she sleeps in our bedroom still. I like it that way. I think in if you look at nature, if you look at animals, they all sleep together. The horses would, the dogs would, the cats would. They would never put their babies in a separate room. So I just don't want her being a separate room.
Whereas Phoebe's already in her own room. So this is the thing. There's no right or wrong. It's just what feels right. Whereas
exactly.
For me, I felt like she was more unsettled because she was close to me. And I wasn't sleeping well because I was so hyper-tuned into every single snuffle and, you know, mini cry. So it entirely depends.
And you're right, it does depend. I just feel it's right, and my husband feels it's right. So this is what we're doing. And it really helps us, because every time she does wake up and cries, I just it takes me two steps and there I am, and I can comfort her, and she falls asleep immediately. If she was in another room, it would take me longer to get there, to hear her, etc. So I just feel comfortable.
Also, selfishly, then you'd be more awake if you have to go, and then it's harder to fall back asleep. So pros and cons to everything.
Well, you know, as we were talking about earlier in your article about, you know, where will you be in 10 years' time when it comes to your career? You know, are you going to be employable in 10 years' time? And it's similar in the sense of becoming a mom. You know, you're both career women and you've become moms in the last couple of years. And so you have to make that work into your lifestyle and still hold on to yourself. So
that's exactly right. And that's something we're really keen on. You know, we were Nick and Helen long before Phoebe came along. We wanted to stay Nick and Helen, which is why it's great. 7 o'clock, she's in her room, and then that evening's ours. Admittedly, we just watched films and eat food on the sofa at the minute because we're too tired to do anything else. But that's our time, which I think is really important. And also in terms of the house as well, to have an adult only space. So it feels like I'm fully aware there's going to be a wave of brightly coloured plastic in my life in the next couple of years, but if we can try and contain that, I think that would help my sanity a huge amount. How are you finding that side?
I value our evenings when my daughter's in bed and we watch a movie, or we exercise. One goes to the gym, the other stays at home. Well, obviously that's not an interaction, but still it's sort of
alone time's important.
Time.
Yeah.
And now when I have a few minutes to myself, I value them so much more because I hardly get me time.
Yeah, do you know
I come home from work and then my other job starts, is obviously my number one job is being a mom. And so you have two jobs that you need to deal with.
What I've really found is, you know, if you want something done, ask a busy person to do it. And a busy person is usually a mum. It's amazing what you can achieve in an hour with one hand. You know, if a baby's having a nap, you can get around that house, get things cleaned up. So I'm in the middle of trying to buy a house at the moment, so trying to, you know, doing paperwork, doing emails, making phone calls. Whereas an hour before, you know, I'd fritter that away with no problem.
Well,
on Twitter for an hour.
Say, I, as always, I am in awe of moms and working moms and moms who just seem to manage so much in their day. I mean, I really take my hat off to you. I don't know how you do it.
I'm not doing it yet, Suzanne.
That's my really brings me on to my next question then. So where do you think you see yourselves in 10 years' time? You know, will there be more children or not? You know, is there going to be... the career,
the
you
big
know,
questions.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, you don't have to stick to it, but where you are this minute, what do you think? What's your feeling about 10 years to come?
Like I said before, I'm slightly concerned about having number two because number one has been quite easy so far. But of course, you know, I have a younger brother, and I'd like Phoebe to have a younger sibling, ideally, if we're able to do that. But I absolutely want to have my own identity and my own job and have some financial independence as well. So while you're saying you can't have it all, I think you can definitely strike a balance. And perhaps as things change, you know, technology allows you to work remotely as well. So I think we need to embrace a bit of technology on that front. So perhaps that's something I'll be doing too. But I'm loving the magazine, and I'm really looking forward to going back to work. So hopefully I can continue to do a bit of both. But you need help. So.
But your weekends will be filled with children's birthdays.
I am well aware of
in
that.
In Dubai, it's just crazy. Everyone invites everyone. So I hear from parents that all they do on a Friday and a Saturday is go to children's birthdays. That's their entire weekend. I said, Thomas, we're not doing that.
So, yeah, in the 10 years to come for you, Linda, is going to be lots of possibly driving around, and not only for birthday parties, but school runs.
Yeah, mum's taxi.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that today. Why don't people use more school buses? I want to pick a school for Clara that is sort of close by to the Palm where we live. They're not that many. But I'm really happy to put her on a bus because I was on a bus all my life from when I was 9 years old. I was on a bus. It's fine.
I think Dubai roads might be the answer to that question.
Yeah,
to
I
be
know.
Honest, I don't know if it's since I've had Phoebe, but I feel like the roads are so much more dangerous. I feel like because I've got such precious cargo, I want to tell the world, back off my car.
Mm.
Choose a lane, stick to it, indicate. I'm hyper aware of how dangerous Dubai roads are at the moment. So although I've got friends who drop their children off before they go to work, brilliant, and then they get the bus home. So having that flexibility as well, and a lot depends on the roads that they're going to be going on. I'd love to hear actually from any listeners who do or don't put their kids on school buses and their reasons why, because even at 10 weeks old, we're already thinking about schools.
Yeah,
how
indeed.
Ridiculous is
yeah.
that?
Helen, always a pleasure. Great to see you again. Thanks for dropping by this
pleasure.
Morning.
Pleasure, lovely to be back and see you both.